You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. It's a wonderful day here. We have a very interesting fellow to be on. Micah Bevitz is the CEO of iTelecom, and he's the manager of a brand new program that they've been putting together for, it's called the iAgent program. And I'm really interested in exploring how this might help companies that want to do a pivot, individuals who are looking for new opportunities because their old ones have disappeared in this COVID constraint world. So welcome, Micah.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege to be here.
Well, we're going to have a lot of fun. So tell me a little bit about iTelecom first.
Yeah, we were founded in 2007. We are a very odd combination of cloud managed service provider and master agency. We assist individuals and businesses with their technology, whether that be a communication system like a phone system or their data network or their connectivity. We find the best technology vendors in the industry and we put those together as a solution for them and then assist with the implementation and the ongoing support.
Wonderful. And now that's been successful for you?
Yes. So I'm very, very lucky in that technology is always in demand. Folks are always either A, expanding and needing new technology to tackle new pain points, or, you know, folks are looking to save money and need technology to assist them to do that. So I'm very lucky that in this world, no matter what is going on, we are, you know, frequently in need.
So who are your target markets?
So, you know, I get that asked that question a lot by various people, and that really would have been a smart thing to figure out at the beginning in 2007. Instead, we took a we'll take all comers approach, and that has been both very beneficial and difficult at the same time. So we take all comers. So any company out there, you know, that uses technology is a company we can help, whether that be someone with two people all the way up to, you know, enterprise level customers like casinos and stuff like that.
Wow. So is there a region that you work in or are you national or international?
We are nationwide. So we are in all 40 or in all continental 48 states. We haven't had an install in Hawaii yet, but I'm sure if it came up, you know, we could manage it, and we haven't had one in Alaska. Yeah. We do national installations and support. We do have some vendors that sell internationally as well, but we don't have the same type of, you know, on-site technician presence internationally as we do in the States.
So you're not just connecting people remotely, you're actually coming into the office and setting up networks connections.
Yes, absolutely. Usually that is with a local technician who we vet. I am very lucky to work with a company called Pipeline Networks and a gentleman named Chris Carman. He assists me with locating those technicians and he does a phenomenal job. He, you know, comes up with a, you know, quite the vetting process before he sends a technician on site. And so we usually have very, you know, good results with the technicians who we send out.
Well, that's excellent. So this is an example of a virtual company then.
Yeah. I mean, I've been working from home for a long time. Everybody in my California side all works from home. You know, we had an office at the beginning, and then we all went virtual. We do have an office in South Florida because we have, you know, salespeople who work out there. But yes, theoretically speaking, it would be very easy to have everybody work from home. Mm-hmm. You know, part of our enablement is helping companies work from anywhere. And, you know, when this pandemic hit, you know, our clients were very lucky in so much that we had already set them up for this eventuality. You know, one of the questions I typically ask customers before this pandemic happened was, you know, what would you do tomorrow if you had to send everybody to work from home at the drop of a hat? What would happen?
You and actually asked them that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
No question. Yeah, yeah. And I can't tell you the number of offices I got laughed out of. They're like, "What? Why would we ever need that?" You know?
Right.
One in particular, I will never forget. They basically, you know, just, you know, shoved me out of their office because they thought the question was so absurd. And here we are. And the key was
They didn't call you back though, did they?
Oh no, they did not. No. I first off, I'm curious if they're around anymore. I haven't had a chance to check because we've been so busy.
Uh-huh.
I have to imagine if they were where they were when I visited them, this was very hard on them. Right. At the end of the day, you know, it's not just about enabling companies to work from anywhere. It's about working from anywhere securely.
Mm-hmm.
And giving your end user the experience that they are having in the office. You know, they should not have to take additional steps to work from home that they did to work from the office. If you're asking your end user to do that, you know, you're asking for trouble, you know, because they may forget, it might make their job harder, it might take longer, and employees want to get the job done as quickly as they can.
Mm-hmm.
Understandably. And if you're asking them to do a 1-hour job and you're giving them tools that takes them 2 hours, that's not good. So you have to make the same experience regardless of where they are. You know, I say this to people all the time. If you're giving anybody a new process or a new product or whatever it may be, whatever the thing is that you're giving them has to be better than what they are doing right now. It can't be even just the same. It has to be better or they're not going to use it. And I try to remind IT groups of that constantly as they roll out new software and platforms and stuff to their users. You know, users are not going to care about it as much as you do. And you just have to accept that.
Well, why would you want them to use a new process if it wasn't as good as the old process?
These have all different kinds of reasons, whether it be, you know, them having more, you know, control over minuscule processes, more oversight over something, a belief that it's going to cost less in the long run. And at the end of the day, you know, if you look up how long a company lasts after it's had a security breach, it's not very long and most of them don't survive. So it's in your best interest to make sure that that never happens. You know, most of these owners have worked their whole lives for these companies that they've built. Why would you put that at risk and give your end user any reason whatsoever not to be as secure as possible? And that's what it is, you know, securing, you know, your company is what's best for your end user, because if there's no company, there is no end user.
Well, it's like putting locks on the front door, right?
I'm sorry, say that again.
It's like putting locks on the front
door.
Yes,
that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And you know, there was a time when I grew up that we didn't have to have locks on the front door. I could leave my bicycle out in the front yard and it would be there. I don't think that's true in most metropolitan areas today.
Right. And it's about, you know, just making sure that you're safe. And there are ways to do that and there are ways not to do that. Anybody can go out now and look at all the breaches that are going on and losses of data that are going on. And that is going to be, you know, exponentially greater after this pandemic, once all of it, you know, rolls out, because you don't hear about these data breaches for months after they happen. So we'll be seeing a you know, quite the deluge of reports, you know, after the pandemic.
Well, what have you learned from companies in the process of this? For instance, one of the companies I work with was very concerned about productivity. Mm-hmm. And you know, his picture of the world was, if I can't see them, they're probably not doing their work. And it took a while for me, as a longer conversation, to help him understand that if the people that he has hired are using this time to get away without doing something, they're probably the wrong people for it.
Right.
And that if he's got somebody who really understands what we call gets it, they get how important this particular task is to helping the company thrive and maybe in this case even survive, they understand that and they want to do it, and then finally they have the capacity, the capability to do it, their productivity is going to go up because they don't have a lot of distractions. Has that been your experience?
So here's the counterintuitive part of it, right? So that business owner who is super worried about the productivity of remote people that he can't watch or he or she can't watch is the one who makes that remote user take all these extra steps so that he can have more, you know, control over the granularity of what they do, and then makes their job harder outside of the office than it is inside of the office. So now they have to do all of these extra steps when they're outside that they didn't have to do when they're inside. So now it takes them longer to do their job. And now they don't want to do their job well. They just want to get it done as quickly as possible. So they circumvent those steps. They circumvent security. Mm-hmm. And that's when problems happen. If you treat that user with respect and you give them the tools for them to do their job the same way anywhere, and you've hired appropriately, you know, you don't have to worry about stuff like that. So I agree with you. You know, if you've hired well, if you've hired the right people, you know, you shouldn't be worried about that person and what they're doing remotely. You know, you can tell if someone is getting their job done or not. And if you don't have the systems in place to tell that, you know, that's a whole separate story, you know.
What I see is this is that the COVID constraints have really accelerated a change that was moving along, not just working remotely, but also decentralizing the control. And when we share authority, then that requires people to step up and to become more responsible for helping the company work. And it's no longer, I'm just here for the paycheck. I don't care what happens to the company. It's obvious. The companies go away, and the constraints have made it clear. If we're not all pulling together, and if we're not all together in this, and we're not going to be here at all. And so finding the right people, to me, my experience, increases the productivity. When you've really taken seriously that the people that you want to be working for you are those who get it, who want it, and have the capacity for it.
I agree completely. This decentralization has been very beneficial to the things that my company does. So typically, if you were a law firm of 45 people in an office, you could have one IT guy there to manage everything that was going on. When you take those same 45 people and you send them out to individual locations, now you're dealing with, you know, at least 45 different internet connections. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with 45 different entry points. At least, even though everyone should have a backup internet connection, so really 90, but that's a whole separate mm-hmm. IT guy desire. and one IT guy can't manage that anymore. So we are seeing a bigger, a shift to, you know, IT guys and companies needing to depend upon companies to assist them with their technology, because, you know, eight people at the same time might need your help. So you need to have an entire company with a staff of support folks ready to assist you. And that's why, you know, those next gen technologies like hosted desktop are so important, because when you have that technology, that cloud company, you know, and their support staff can help any one of your users from anywhere, because it's their infrastructure that's going down. So this big shift to, you know, working remotely, and I believe this is, you know, just like you said, this is not just a trend. This is how things are going to be. You know, there's going to be a hybrid environment where, you know, saying somebody works from home predominantly is not that big a deal.
Right. Right.
On top of that, you know, I think this is a huge boon, you know, for any, you know, anybody who had trouble getting into the office at some point. So for whatever reason, someone wasn't able to get into the office, you know, and that business told them, hey, we can't hire you because you can't get into the office. You know, that's no longer an excuse.
Well, look at the things that are different. Let's suppose somebody is listening to you and saying, oh my goodness, I have to have an IT staff. How am I going to pay for that? Well, just stand up from your desk and look around. All those empty desks, you no longer have to have that real estate. So you're going to come out, you're going to come out better at the other end, because IT staff is a lot less expensive than all the real estate that you had to put all of those people in seats. And another thing, when you talk about hiring the right people, once you're remote, you can be any place. You and I could be next door and we could be doing exactly what we're doing right now on Zoom. Or we could be 3,000 miles apart and be on Zoom. So I'm finding that there's some really interesting things happening in terms of people leaving cities and moving into not just suburbs, but moving into Boise, Idaho, moving into Great Falls, Montana, and not even missing a beat. I mean, even if they had to spend the night in Salt Lake City driving from LA to Boise, they're doing a full day's work in the motel. It's amazing.
Absolutely. So having, you know, having hosted desktops truly allows for that work from anywhere environment. It's the same exact experience no matter where you are.
Well, tell me, what do you mean by hosted desktops? That's a new term.
Sure.
For me.
Sure. So also known as desktop as a service, also known as VDI, or virtual desktop instance. It is basically, you know, so the desktop that you are using is in a data center somewhere, and all you're seeing on your screen is an image of that desktop transmitted over the internet. So you can shut it down, drive somewhere else, turn it back on, and everything there still exists with whatever unit you are using to get to it, whether it be a smartphone, a thin client, a laptop, a desktop. And the reason that's so beneficial is that, you know, you don't have to install programs on it. You know, when the hardware breaks, you don't lose anything. There's nothing stored locally. You know, the story I like to tell is at my brother's wedding, he had a DJ, and I got a call to make a change on a phone system for a client, and I was able to use the DJ's tablet to get onto my hosted desktop and make the changes I needed to, you know, for my client, you know, without access to really a desktop computer or anything. And without that, I wouldn't have been able to do that. So hosted desktop, because the desktop is stored, you know, in a data center somewhere, and you're just seeing an image, the security is much easier to handle because there's nothing happening locally. It's just the image you're seeing locally. So, you know, what is being passed by a firewall is much more mundane, much harder to hack into in any fashion.
If I have a desktop and I have a hosted desktop, mm-hmm. can I turn that off and turn on my own local desktop?
Yeah, so if you're using a regular desktop, the hosted desktop kind of, you know, opens up on top of it, and then you would have a local and a hosted environment, correct? So for me, I have my local computer where I have all my personal stuff, and then my hosted desktop is where all my business files and all my, I do all my business stuff. So, you know, the great part for me is that means when I go home to Orlando where my family's from and I'm staying in my childhood room, my dad has a desktop computer there that I can just turn on, and, you know, all my work stuff is right there for me because I just load into my hosted desktop. So it's just like I'm working back in my, you know, on my computer in Los Angeles.
Hmm. So that's part of the growth then, part of the change in response is how we will manage all of this for you. And you don't even have to have a place for the server in your office.
Oh yeah, no more. Yeah, for the most part, no more servers. All of that is in a hosted environment. The servers are right next to the desktops in the data center. So the responsiveness is actually sometimes faster in the hosted than it is on the local, even with the server on-prem.
So bye-bye to VPN.
So yeah, VPN. VPNs are really not as secure as folks think they are. And the biggest reason for that is, you know, if I'm on a computer and I'm VPNing into my corporate network somewhere, you know, and my computer that I got from work may be secure, but it's connected to my home network. And, you know, there are other people connected to that network with machines that are compromised. Well, now I've connected my corporate network to another network with compromised units on it. Whereas using a hosted desktop, you don't have to really worry about any of that because it's just an image. Nothing of substance is being transmitted to the local user.
And now also you were talking about cybersecurity.
Yes.
And what I'm discovering is that cybersecurity, it's not rocket science.
So yeah, so 90% of it is people just paying attention. I'll be very candid. It's making sure you're not entering your password places you shouldn't. It's recognizing phishing attacks. And a sore point for me in that if you're asking your business to communicate over email, for the most part, you're giving them a system to communicate that is rife with potential breaches and fraud and phishing and all that kind of stuff. Everybody who works in a corporation has heard the story about HR getting an email from somebody internally asking them to change their bank account information about where their pay goes. Right. And it's not actually that person, right?
Right.
And it happens all the time. HR professionals are busy. Accounting professionals are busy. Some intern gets the email and doesn't know any better, whatever it may be. So on the one hand, yes, it is important that we educate our end users. But also, it's our job as the technology community to give them tools that aren't rife with these exploits.
Well, would this be like Slack?
So there's Slack. There's a bunch of internal communication tools that companies can use that allow them, you know, a much more secure environment to communicate. So for our customers, we recommend that all of their internal communication happen into one of those tools. So we recommend one called SpeakApp that we sell and implement for clients that allows for branding and some other stuff that's pretty cool. And there's a few other communications companies that have hubs internally, like Microsoft Teams, mm-hmm. Mitel, Star2Star has Team Hub. Most of the unified communication companies at this point now have a team environment where you can do your internal communication.
And some Slack, more of it, Slack would be acceptable.
Yeah, Slack would be an example of one of those, right.
All right, so what would you use for your customers? Would you still use email for your customers?
So depending on what kind of business I am would depend on what I would use. So if I'm a networking organization and all of my customers are people that I am inside the network, I would find an internal communication platform that allowed for outside users, and I would bring all of my customers or paying customers into that application to communicate, and that is how I would do that. If I were a medical office, I would try and transition to SMS and text messaging to communicate.
I'm finding text messaging is just a huge transition. I was doing a project on the virtual voting encouragement, something like this, an app, and it takes a look at all of my contacts and then allows me to say to them, hey, I'm using this to encourage people to vote. So download the app and encourage your friends to vote, because I don't want to get involved in pushing for one side or the other, even though I have some very strong feelings, but I don't feel comfortable doing that. But I do feel comfortable saying vote. And as it went through, most of my contacts, I could text them. Some of my didn't even have emails for them, but texting worked. And I'm finding this is a big transition to texting, shorter messages, but you don't need you don't need a long conversation.
I agree. So we are moving from a, email world to a text world to a internal communications hub world for a lot of our, ongoing communication. So that is certainly what I would recommend over email. Everybody has email fatigue nowadays. We are just overwhelmed with it. It's just, there's so much. And if we want to get the responses that we want, we need to focus that. And the younger kids, they demand that, you're not going to get by with them by giving them email. Basically when you give them email, you're telling them, here's a big old bucket of dirt, figure out, you sift through it. Good luck. That was fine for us. But they don't accept that. And understandably so, they know that there's better ways to do things. They want hyper-focused, bite-sized pieces of information that apply to them.
Right.
And they're right. Isn't that what we all want? We want to be served up, what we want to see. We don't want to spend time seeing or reading things that don't apply to us. And it is important that that is how we communicate with our customers, with our teammates, and with our end users. So,
is it interesting that 10 years ago, asking a receptionist for someone's cell phone number was met with great resistance? And there was a period of time in there when even if I had somebody's cell phone, I felt like sending them a text message was invasive. And now I get text messages that are cold messages that I reply stop to. But it's a very different world.
Absolutely. One of the marketing campaigns that we are starting this year, or well, I guess at the end of the year, might at the beginning of next year, is taking all of those cell phone numbers that we have acquired that we really haven't done a lot with and putting them into a text message, marketing engine so that we can, start reaching out that way, especially now that people are working remote. We're getting calls now from, my wife's dental office. The hygienist called her from her cell phone because she was working from home. Right. And we're like, my wife didn't pick up the call because she had no idea who it was.
Right.
And in that exact instance, which I should probably call my dental office about this, but, you know, they should have given this person the tools necessary to call my wife. So it looked like it was the office calling. So she would have picked up the phone.
What tools are those?
They could have given her, a soft phone on her computer with a headset that connected to the unified communication system, so that she could have just opened up the CRM or the EMR that the dentist office uses on her home computer. And then she could have just clicked a dial, you know, with her headset from there, and it would have shown the number of the business or even beyond that, a program that could have sent her a text message and said, hey, you know, we have these open appointments, you know, you can choose an appointment here or call us back.
It's the identifying that phone number that's where the text message is originating, and the phone that's receiving that must have it in its own contact list. So is there a way to get an identification that this is the dental office if that number is not in the contact list?
So it'll come through and it'll say at the front of the message, like, this is so-and-so dental's office, and then it'll send the message, yeah. So there are certainly ways to preface the messages. So, and then you can have, you know, automated response. You can actually have it where it has the appointment times,
right.
Choose the appointment, schedule it right there. Mm-hmm. But because the dental office doesn't have any of that, the hygienist was calling from her cell phone.
Right.
My wife didn't recognize it. She, you know, we're very busy and, you know, didn't check the message until days later, till after all the appointments had passed, you know, so
right.
Because they didn't give her the tools, she, you know, they missed out on booking a client.
Yeah. Back to cybersecurity. One of the companies that I've been interested in is working with high school graduates and teaching them in a 4-week program to be a cybersecurity consultant. Then they, you know, assuming they pass that, then they have a 6-week internship, and then they're qualified to work with companies. I just find that so amazing. And that's when I said it's not rocket science, but it is a series, it's a process. How you protect yourself is a process. It's not a creative art.
Yeah, I absolutely. There are just certain steps that people need to take and certain benchmarks that they need to hit in order to make sure that they are secure. And again, a lot of it is behavioral. A lot of it is just being safe with your information, updating your passwords when you're supposed to. And a lot of times, you know, companies are too busy doing the business of their business, you know, to worry about that stuff. So having somebody on staff or bringing a company in to, you know, assist people with that behavior is oftentimes what is necessary. And to teach people on how to behave correctly, you know, I'm sure those training classes are probably pretty intense.
Well, and what it really is doing is helping people into an area of a finite area of expertise where they can have a good living. And I've been recommending lots of people to them, people who otherwise, Native Americans who, otherwise would not have access to this.
Yes.
Kids who've been homeschooled and really haven't left the nest. I mean, these are all very interesting ways of, these are pathways to help people thrive.
Yeah, enabling folks to thrive is a passion of mine as well. That's kind of how we came out with the iAgent, you know, agency program and application, because we wanted to find something that would allow anybody to say, I like technology. I love talking about technology. I'd love to sell technology, but how do I do that? I have a great network. People trust me. You know, I want to do this. You know, how do I take that next step? And that is why we came out with the iAgent program and application. This is going to help those folks immediately dive in to selling tech. They can go from being interested to selling tech to selling technology in an hour or less with my team.
So what would that be like if we had, let's suppose we had somebody who had been, their business failed. They certainly know enough people, have a good network. What would they do? Would they call you, text you? How would they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So the best way to get in touch with me is my email right now, especially for outside my organization. So, and that's Micah@itelecom.com, Micah@itelecom.com. And just let me know you're interested in, you know, being an eye agent, and we will get you signed up. We will get you loaded into our application. We'll take you on a tour of the technologies and the different carriers that you can sell. And then right away, you know, we will guide you to the different tools that you can use to learn about these carriers and these technologies, as well as schedule personal one-on-ones with myself and my team to help you understand, you know, how to sell this technology. We'll also assist you with, you know, email templates and marketing to your customers. So if you have a list of folks that you want to market to, our marketing team will help you put together those emails to send out. They'll assist you in putting together, you know, a script to use when you're calling your potential customers. You know, we want to make sure as an eye agent that you have, you know, the best foot forward and that you are going to sound educated when you talk to your customers. We know that, you know, we want people to be comfortable. We want people to feel good about going in and talking to somebody about this. You know, one of the things I tell my salespeople all the time is there isn't a single company who we have worked with who wasn't better off because of it. So when you're calling them or you're walking in their door, you know, post-pandemic walking in their door to talk to them, know that you are a good thing for them, whether they recognize that or not, you know, right. So you are doing a good thing. So, and we will help you get to that point. We can supply email address, you know, for work, a work number. You know, we're going to empower you to be successful in this field. You know, because very candidly, the more successful you are, the more successful we are. So we will help you, you know, get to that point. So if you've ever been interested in selling technology or you want a new revenue stream, which is evergreen, you know, you reach out to me and we will help you get there.
So if I'm doing that, what do I have to pay?
What do you have to pay for what?
Pay for the training?
You did $0. This is a free, you sign up with us. I want my agents to be the most educated people in the industry.
And so how do I get paid then?
Great question. So we have relationships with carriers and technology vendors like Verizon or Star2Star, AT&T, Zoom. And these companies pay us, you know, sometimes an upfront and a monthly residual for selling their product and making sure that the customer keeps their product, you know, because quite candidly, we don't get paid unless the customer keeps it and continues to pay for it. So it's in our best interest to make sure that they are continually happy with it. So we support that product as long as they have it. Mm-hmm. We do. And so the agent will get paid a percentage of the money that comes in for that. Typically that, you know, ranges anywhere from 30% for our referral agents. Those are folks who just send us customers who are like, this customer needs you, go help them. I'm not interested in doing anything. We have 70% for standard agents who are folks who are the liaison between the customer and us presenting contracts and quotes. And you know, they can make upwards of 80% of the compensation. So that is how we get paid.
And so if you were talking to someone who had been, you know, living on between $50,000 and $60,000 a year, mm-hmm. would it be reasonable that they could learn how to earn more than that?
Yes, certainly. If you have a good network, if you are willing to go out there and put in the time, absolutely. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of folks who are in sales, you know, say this all the time, and I hate to repeat something that's probably been said a lot of times in your show, but it is a numbers game. Mm-hmm. It's about finding folks who need you. Not everybody is going to need you. You know, there are going to be companies who are doing very well with their IT and their tech right now, and great, great for them. You know, we're looking for the people who aren't. So if you're calling, you know, someone's going to pick up that phone, or going to answer that email or answer that text message or, you know, see your post, who needs help, and, you know, we will help them. Like so I said,
you're going to teach me how to sell as well as how to talk about technology.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we will help you with scripts. You know, we will help you with rebuttals, all of that kind of stuff we are going to supply you with so that you can, you know, go out and sell. And you know, we're consultative salespeople. We are not pushing a specific product or technology. We're not going into a door saying, we're going to sell this product today. You're just bringing in the client. You know, we have an engineering team that is going to put together the solutions for you. We're going to help you, especially at first, present them to the client. So there's no real hard selling in this. You know, we are being engaged by you and your customer. You know, they're looking to save money. They have the following pain points with their technology. They're looking to accomplish this. And then we go back, put together a myriad of solutions for them or ways to accomplish that at different price points. And then we help them choose the best one. So we teach them how to be, you know, consultative, you know, with the customer. You know, we teach them how to break down the quotes. And we're there for them every step of the way. You know?
Do I have to be either in LA or Florida?
You can be anywhere in the country.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, that's fascinating. I mean, what I'm really excited about is, you know, you see what's going on in the streets about people saying we don't have opportunities. And I think there's a lot of opportunities that are bubbling up where people are recognizing that they can help people learn how to do the things that will give them not just a surviving income, but a thriving income. And I really applaud that. I applaud that with you. I applaud that with a company that's teaching people how to provide cybersecurity. And there's a number of things around right now that I'm becoming very aware of where people are saying, come on, I'll teach you how to do it.
Absolutely. And, you know, very, you know, frankly, there are a lot of companies out there that need technology help, that need IT help, especially right now in the world that we are living in. There are a lot of organizations out there that were not prepared for this, but have an internal IT team that doesn't want to shift them to this new world. Right. And they need help, yes, because it kind of, you know, just like you said, it decentralizes everything.
Right.
You know, it's changing the world that we live in and that we work in and how that is managed. And a lot of these internal IT teams have golden keys, and so it's very hard. So a lot of organizations need an outside person to come in and help review the situation.
Well, they need some fresh blood.
Yes, it is in dire need right now.
They may have sunk costs in their current IT staff. And
yes.
So being able to engage somebody, you can call it part-time, but you're really engaging somebody for the project of helping us make the transition to the next step.
And that's the best part about what we do. Is that we are a free service, not just for our agents, but also for our customers. We don't charge our customers anything. Mm-hmm. We get paid by our carriers. I always tell my customers when they ask us, you know, why would I go with you over a consultant, you know, who's going to charge me up front? And I say, well, The reason is the consultant who charges you up front, you know, once their job is done and you've paid them, whether they have told you, you know, whether their recommendation was good or not after implementation, you know, it doesn't matter to them. They're gone.
Right.
For us, we only get paid when you pay your bill. So if you don't like the service, we don't get paid. So it's in our best interest to only bring solutions to you that we think you are going to keep for a long time because you're going to be happy with it, and bring you solutions that there's going to be as little issue with as possible, because every time there's an issue, we have to get engaged to help mitigate that issue. So I vet stuff to bring to my customer that's going to be the least amount of problems, just like they want.
You really are
what we want.
You really are in a servant mentality.
Absolutely.
And I applaud that. It sounds like you're doing that with your clients, and that you have the opportunity now to also do that with people who are going to go out and become servants in your stead for other companies. So that's wonderful. Micah, this has been great. I've really enjoyed getting to know you, and I will be sending you some people. I'll be introducing you to a fellow named Robert Bruck at Union
great.
Bank in L.A. He comes across lots of people who are looking for opportunities. And so look forward to seeing that.
That would be great. Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Good. So once again, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, what would they do?
The best way to get my attention is to email me at micah@itelecom.com, micah@itelecom.com. My phone number is 323-602-0421, 323-602-0421. But again, I am on calls a lot of the day, so the best way to get my attention is typically an email, and I will get right back to you.
Can somebody text you on that number?
They can text me on that number as well.
Good.
Correct.
Excellent. Well, this has been fine. So if you'll stick around for a moment, letting everybody else know, this is an example of how businesses in California are not only thriving, but they're also giving others the opportunity to learn how to thrive in business in California.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.